This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
PGA Nation, we are back. And for those of you who maybe forgot or don't know, we're back to where it all began. For me, at least, this is the tournament where Rom royally, you know what, me. And while it cost me a lot of money, it got us to where we are today. And where are we today? We're having a draft cast with the biggest name in all of golf betting Twitter. If you bet on golf, if you watch our show, this man needs no introduction. Pat Mayo, the legend of fantasy golf and golf betting to many other sports that he's an expert in. We greatly appreciate you joining us tonight. Pat, how you doing?
I'm doing well. You only achieve legend status once you're truly old, so thanks.
Well, it's questionable because I don't think you're even the oldest person on this draft, but you're still a legend and you're the only legend in the draft. So for all of us, we are looking forward to hopefully getting a W on the draft cast with a legend present. But we appreciate you taking the time to have some fun and draft with us tonight. David, how you doing tonight?
I'm good, mate. I'm good. Look, yeah, super grateful to have Mayo on the show tonight. It's great to catch up with him again. Born out of actually, we both put some picks together for the Masters and end up on the same guy who played like rubbish. But from there, you know, that partnership was formed and went on the show with Pat. It was a lot of fun. And then he agreed to come on the draft cast and draft some players and get used to the win daily banter that we have on the show. And super excited. I will say, though, the water apparently in Canada is very, very good. Pat assured me that he is much older than me. Believe it or not, it's just that the quality of the fresh air or something up there in Canada is really what makes the difference.
Yeah, lots of fresh water. You know, top 99th percentile. It's the only thing that we do well where I live is having fresh water. So eventually, I assume the other countries are going to come for it. It's not good news.
Yeah. All right. Well, Pat's off to a big advantage tonight with the fresh water, which we all have the luxury of having. So I'm going to have to use my... I got my old trusty water bottle of Poland Spring. It's not as fresh, so I hope it can keep me up with the draft tonight. Spence, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. I'll take what I think is being the youngest one on the show. I don't know if that's confirmed. I don't know how old David is. I don't know how old Pat is. I know I am a little bit younger than you are, Joel, but it's an interesting dynamic that we have. Obviously, it's an honor to have Pat on this show with us. I'm not 100% sure if this has become more complicated or less complicated to win. Like, obviously, you have Pat here. You bring in the ringer on that end. There is no potential for me going for a three-peat here that the audience and Joel are going to be able to get along. There's no possibility that we don't have it on any given week ever.
So that is a good point. As an update, if you haven't read on Twitter, for the first time in DraftCast history, it's going to be team audience and myself drafting together as a team. And to Spencer's point, there's a very small chance that we're going to be aligned or get along, but I have a change in giraffe format. I will make it work. My goal is to team up with the audience and defeat Pat Mayo, which would go in as the first line in my resume if we were able to pull that off at the end of the week. So hopefully we can pull it off. Audience, I'm relying on you guys. I think we can do it. But before we dive into that, Spence, if you follow along in this show, Spence gives the greatest course breakdown that I've seen. It really helps you if you're going to be betting on the tournament this week. Understand the profile and type of golfer that we're looking for. So, Spence, break it down. We're going to Dublin, not Ireland, but still Dublin. What are you looking for on the course this week?
You look at Muirfield, and Augusta National's influences are very subtly woven into the fabric of Muirfield Village. You have stunning backdrops that could rival that of the most renowned venues in the world. I've always thought that Jack Nicklaus has been incredibly protective of this property in the past. When we dive into some of the reconstructions that have been put into place to keep a dynamic challenge for the event yearly, I don't know if we've always gotten that return pre-Patrick Cantlay's win in 2019 when he reached 19 under par to capture the title. But if the course may have started to resemble a pitch and scramble that was too straightforward before that victory, Nicklaus quickly nipped that sentiment when he did an overall of the land, adding 150 yards to the table in midst of also creating brand new green complexes that are going to yield extremely sinister results when you look at the 4-inch thick rough that surrounds this layout from tee to green. I think one of the most fascinating shifts in the player performance when you run a model are the indicators post-renovation in the accuracy and GIR percentage. Accuracy has become more manageable during all four iterations. The field's GIR percentage, though, has dropped significantly. That's an extremely unique combination since it highlights a few critical factors that probably ended up being the missing link that we weren't getting when you look at off the tee results. Golfers now have the opportunity to achieve high-end upside if they steer clear of the rough. That's a factor that benefits both distance and accuracy players. And then we also get quick greens that are small in stature and add to the difficulty since the thick rough around the putting surface is going to emphasize approach play more than usual. That is the reason why we've seen that decline in GIR projection over the last 4 years. We can talk about this maybe not necessarily being the perfect course from top to bottom, but I will say this, guys, like it's going to be nice to see a venue that's put into place to challenge the field. You have Nicklaus front and center making sure that that's going to come into play. So it's going to be a fun tournament that's going to add some challenge here that maybe we haven't gotten every single week in 2024.
For sure going to be a tough tournament, challenge, a fun tournament. This is always an enjoyable one to watch as well. So appreciate the breakdown, Spence. Listen back. It definitely helps to get a profile of golfer that might have an edge or you might want to lean toward each week. Without further ado, we'll pull up the draft board. And as a reminder, I'll explain how it works, maybe a little bit unique for tonight. It is a four-man snake-style draft. So what that means, it's like your typical fantasy football draft. It will go 1 through 4, Spencer first, Pat second, David third, audience and myself will go fourth. We will have 2 picks in a row on the wheel, and then we will go back again. The big caveat with this draft is you do need to stay within a DraftKings salary. So you can't just take all the best players. You do need to make sure that you can afford each golfer that you draft throughout the show. Without further ado, Spence, with the first pick, you are on the clock.
I'm going to spend a little bit more time talking about the player I'm not taking here, and then we'll get into the selection that is being made. I think from a game theory perspective, the most interesting thing about having the number one pick here, and I know on this show we try not to go behind the curtain and reveal picks further down the line just because it influences the draft, but you sit here with Scottie Scheffler, 12,500. I'm seeing 35% right now. I don't have a problem with the ownership. There's 7 categories that I weighed this week. Scottie Scheffler is number one in 6 of those categories. And by the way, the 1 category is that he's not number one and he's number 2 in inside of my model. So all of the upside metrics are very clear for why Scottie Scheffler would be the pick here. My biggest concern with going that route, and I talked about game theory, and it's more so game theory when we're trying to construct lineups here that we can enter into large field GPP tournaments, maybe not even just take on each other. In this capacity is I don't pick again for 7 selections. And when you have a tournament with just over 70 players, I worry a little bit about what it ends up looking like when it comes back to me 7 picks later, because there are certain golfers that I don't want any exposure to. I don't need to have this rekindling with a Jason Day or anybody like that. We've gone down that route way too many times. I'm going to take who's the second most popular player on the board. I thought he was the best value in the outright market when he opened at 16-1 at some of the shops. I'm going to take Colin Morikawa at 9,800. I talked about the seven categories that I ran. Three players ranked inside of the top 10 in all seven of those categories. Scheffler would be one. Morikawa would be the other. And there's a third one that I'll talk about as we get deeper into the show.
All right. Colin Morikawa with the first pick. I like it, Pat. You're on the clock with your second pick, but would love your feedback on Morikawa this week. And let's see who you go with your first pick.
I mean, I love Morikawa this week. I actually ended up betting Victor instead of Morikawa because I'm just such a slut for an extra 4 points, especially that low in the market. So an open at 20, beaten open at 16 for me. But Colin was a guy I had circled originally when I had done my research show. And obviously his history here, he won the workday at this course and then Jack got all pissed off and then they baked it out. And then only Rahm and Ryan Palmer and Tony Finau could end up playing that course the next week. I think Fitzpatrick actually did quite well, but we're never going to see the course that burnt out again. The one thing I would push back on for the course this setup around, based on the people that I've talked to with the course so far, a lot of rain so far in the Columbus area over the last month. And when you line up the two courses next to each other, you have Valhalla 2 weeks ago. Everyone's still all pissed off of how easy it played, but it's not that the course itself was super easy. It's that the greens were very receptive, so guys could go fire at pins. Now, the sub-air system at Muirfield Village should be able to suck out a lot of that moisture, but I don't think it's going to play quite as firm as it has any of the past few years. I do think that if you're dialed in with your irons and you hit the ball high enough, you're going to be able to get the ball to stop. You're going to be able to get a little bit of spin, and maybe the chipping becomes a little bit easier. But as Spencer pointed out, you're going to have to be playing from the fairway. If you play from the rough at this course, you're done. And you're going to be making bogeys in bunches. This is a very high birdie rate for a course and a very high bogey rate for a course. So if you can just kind of dominate the par fives, especially some of those higher ball hitters and how they are going to try to dominate in that category on their second shots, like, you know, these are very wide fairways. I think that people kind of forget that, especially after that redesign. So you can take some of the bigger hitters and hope they can carry the fairway, or you can take some of these shorter hitters knowing that they're always going to be playing from the short grass. Long story short, I like Morikawa enough. I'm taking Scottie Scheffler because he's by far the best player in this field.
Yeah, and there's plenty to like about Scottie Scheffler right now. As long as he can stay out of jail, I think he's got a good chance to win this tournament. You know, we don't need to spend too long about why Scottie Scheffler is a really good play, but, you know, I think I saw someone in the chat say, are we hoping Scheffler gets to us? I was. That was never going to be realistic in this draft. David, I'd love to get feedback from you. Any reason to not play Scottie Scheffler this week?
I mean, not really. I mean, what we saw last year was pretty insane here, right? He gained a ton of strokes on approach. He lost 8 strokes with the putter and then somehow was still in contention. So the disparity, I think, between Denny McCarthy, who finished runner-up to Hovland last year, and Scheffler is perhaps the most entertaining stat I've seen in recent times in golf, because Denny McCarthy gained 20 more strokes putting than Scottie Scheffler at the Memorial last year, which is just absolutely insane. So, yeah, look, I mean, I don't think we need to talk too much about Scheffler. I mean, the guy's good at golf, right?
Yeah. The one thing I would point out with Scheffler when you're constructing lineups for bigger field tournaments is that just don't pair him with Lee Hodges. I love Lee Hodges this week. I bet on Lee Hodges to win. But when you see Lee Hodges' ownership number, like we're tracking it at Fantasy National right now, and it's up anywhere between like 14 and 20%. And I found that the Scheffler number tends to get a little bit compressed, let's say, in projections, that he just seems to come in higher. Like, why wouldn't he? The guy comes inside the top five every single week unless he gets arrested. So it's the very logical pairing when you scroll down of like all the popular players this week. Lee Hodges sticks out like a sore thumb in that bottom of the $6,000 range, where I would independently play him. I just wouldn't play him with Scheffler, because almost every Scheffler lineup's come preloaded with Lee Hodges in them as well.
I think that totally makes sense. And I think that's the conversation you're having when you're thinking about Scheffler. It's less, is Scheffler a good player to bring in your lineup? Of course he is. Of course he should be. But it's, is the salary and ownership enough to make the roster work? And that's kind of what you're thinking through. Pat giving you some advice of, you know, don't play the super cheap, high-owned guy with him, because it's going to be really hard to get different when doing so.
Yeah, and look, these low $6,000 guys, I mean, they bust out all the time. Yeah, good for Lee Hodges. He's gained a bunch of strokes on approach, back-to-back top 12 finishes, even one at Valhalla, which is a pretty good comp. You know, same distance, same architect, same green types, and a bit of moisture out there. So maybe it's a perfect comp for this course as we play it in 2024, just based on the elements. Still doesn't make a difference. Nick Taylor is going to be like 1% below him. So you can have an 18% Lee Hodges or a 1% Nick Taylor. I mean, he's not 18 times more likely to outscore him, so just play Nick Taylor instead.
That's really well, really good point, really well explained. We appreciate you, Pat. David, with the third pick here, Morikawa and Scheffler off the board, who are you targeting?
Yeah, I mean, and it's cool that Pat May has also hit on what we call Rule 16 over at Wind Daily Sports, is you do not play the chalk under 7K. And that just really is the key. It's just always better to avoid that. So that's very key. Hey, look, I was really hoping that this play would get back to me in the third spot. And I'm absolutely stoked to be able to take Xander Schauffele here. I know that Xander gets a hell of a hard time for his ability to win. But what did we see in 2022? He got that monkey off the back, and then he put a string of victories together in quick succession. And not only has he got the victory win off the back, he's also got the major victory off the back. Came at Valhalla, another Nicholas design. The key thing for me this week was the 200-yard approach bucket for Xander. This course demands 33% of all shots come from 200-plus yards. 50% of all shots come from 175 yards. And the disparity between Xander, who's the best in the world over 200 yards at the moment, and second place in that metric, which is Tony Finau, is the same between Tony Finau and Adam Svensson, who's priced at 200-1 in betting markets at the moment, ranking about mid of the pack, basically. So it's not a small disparity in terms of what Xander is able to do with his long irons on approach. I don't think that he's going to have any major hangover. His comp course performance is excellent as well. Not only has he finished 24th or better in every tournament in the last six instances of this event, but at the Wells Fargo, Quail Hollow, he's finished runner-up twice in his most recent performances. Copperhead, I think, is a very good comp course. He's finished fifth. And as I mentioned, he's just won under another Nicholas design as well. So I think this is a really good spot with Xander Schauffele. And he's actually the lowest owned of all those guys at the top of the market, which I find very interesting from a DFS perspective.
Well, Xander certainly, it was nice to see him get that monkey off his back and get the win. He's playing great golf this year. So I like that pick. I'm going to go ahead and endorse it. Would love to get your feedback as well, Pat. Are you on Xander Schauffele this week?
No, I'm not. I think that we've seen enough higher-end players suffer major hangovers, and maybe he comes out of it, and as David pointed out, he reeled off those back-to-back wins at Travelers and the Genesis Scottish Open in consecutive tournaments that he played in to really get that momentum going. So it's very possible that he does well here, but I was looking at the head-to-head market earlier, and they had Xander priced at minus 140 over Morikawa, who was plus 110, and you know, Morikawa has the better history here. Morikawa has come inside the top five of both majors so far this season. He has somehow learned how to chip overnight. Not quite sure how that happened, but it's happened. He's putting well. He's always putted well on these surfaces. And all of a sudden, his irons are firing again. And Xander has never come inside the top 10 in seven starts at Memorial. So I just found it was strange that I can see, I mean, as David pointed out, he's probably going to be the lowest owned of these guys. Therefore, very good DraftKings play, especially at the high end when we're really picking nits. But he's just not someone that I'm really gravitating towards this week. I mean, I like him more than I like Rory, who's also never really played all that well at Memorial over the years. But Xander over Rory, but well behind Victor, Scotty, and Morikawa for me.
Makes sense. How about you, Spence? Will you be playing Xander at all this week?
I like Xander more than Pat does. My model had him as the second best play, $10,000 and up. It was a lot of the reasons why David talked about. You look at some of these matchup markets and where the sharp money is moving these prices. Xander's a favorite against every single person in this tournament, for better or worse, whatever you want to take for that answer, outside of Scottie Scheffler. Third in my model when I looked at GIR percentage plus proximity here. I think there's a lot to like about Xander at what's going to be reduced ownership compared to everybody else.
All right. Team audience, we are on the clock. A lot of nominations in. So what I will explain for how we're going to approach this draft a little differently is get the nominations in. Don't worry about the second, because I'm just going to make our picks based off the audience nominations. So our picks only come from audience nominations, and then I will be the second for who we are selecting, which I know is going to drive a lot of you crazy, and I don't care, because we're going to get the W anyway. So with that being said, I know the first pick based on the audience nomination should be Hovland. I'm going to veto Hovland for this reason. While he did play well around the green last week, I think he's going to struggle around the green here. This has not been his strength. This is one of the toughest courses around the green shots. I just think that's going to catch up to him. I don't want to have Hovland as my play. I am going to endorse a value play as our first pick. We're going to go with Russell Henley first, and we're going to follow that up with, because the audience had him, he wasn't even my second pick, because the audience liked him, I am going to go ahead and nail in, lock in Tony Finau. Both very big value plays. I'm totally fine getting our value plays off the board early. It's going to leave us more money than the rest of the field later on to go up and get some better players. But at 8K and 7,900, I think both of these guys give you top 20 or top 15 potential, which allows us to have a pretty balanced squad in a world where we can't have Shoffley, Scheffler, or Morikawa. I'm okay with getting a really balanced team. It's our way to get different. I think we can still be very competitive with upside with these two picks. Pat, will you be on Henley or Finau at all this week?
I bet Henley to win. Finau, absolutely not. If you're going to rag on Hovland for not being able to chip and then take Tony Finau, like, give your head a shake. So Hovland, ever since he got back with Joe Mayo, all of a sudden he's chipping again. And historically, looking at Victor, where he has done the best around the greens are exactly at the same sort of courses that Spencer described Muirfield Village in being, that there's not a lot of runoff areas here. There's not a lot of tight lies. You get Victor at Heritage or Sawgrass or hell, Pinehurst next week, unless he puts it from off the green, it's going to be a real problem. He's actually pretty decent out of this thick rough where he just kind of has to jab the ball, get it on, and then he has to go make his 7-foot putt, which he's quite capable of doing. I remember this because he won this tournament last year. So I just think it's crazy to go to Finau as a good play and then not take Hovland. It's mind-boggling.
Wow. Well, results to be determined, but I like the feedback, Pat. All right, David, we'll get feedback from you. Any interest in Tony Finau or Russell Henley this week? And then who are you looking at with your second pick?
I love that we got shots fired at the beginning of the second round. That's great to see. It's great that Pat is embracing the banter that comes with the Wind Daily Sports PGA Draftcast and just absolutely ripping into Joel vetoing the team audience pick there. If I was the audience, I'd be absolutely spitting as well. So Joel, if you don't know this, Pat, Joel has a curse on him where at least one of the players that he selects on the Draftcast will withdraw, to the extent that he actually took Scottie Scheffler and he managed to get him arrested. Like, to that kind of level, the curse continues. One of these guys is bound to withdraw now. I was going to take Russell Henley here with my next pick. I also bet him at the Open at 50-1. I mean, look, Data Golf have him ranked as the 8th best player in the world, 16th on the world golf rankings, and you get him at a lowly 8,000 ownership. I'm not actually that concerned about, because I do think he has the consistency. My worry with Henley comes with win equity. We've seen him, like, he's playing at such a level that he should have won by now, and he just hasn't. Like, he hasn't got across the line. Saw that earlier in the year at Sony Open. We really should have closed off the victory and managed not to, although storylines that came later in the year, I think, was maybe in hindsight quite a good thing that the person who won did. So, I would have taken Henley here. Instead, I'm going to take another accuracy-based guy who is very, very good over 200 yards, and that's Corey Connors at 8,500. Ownership's not too high, getting him at 13%, which in a smaller field isn't actually too bad within that 8K range. What I love with Corey Connors, he's one of the better players over 200 yards. His driving accuracy is very good. He absolutely filled it up on the greens last week, which was also on bent grass greens. And he's actually started to improve with the putter, which is really key. The other thing I'd say with Connors is he's actually been pretty good around the greens for the most part. And the putter is really kind of where he begins to struggle. And those long iron proximities are really what I'm keying in on with him. So, look, hoping that he can carry some momentum from a good performance last week, 6 at the Canadian Open. And, look, this is a home of ball strikers, and there's very few ball strikers better than Corey Connors, as well as knowing what he's done at Augusta National with putter, with 3 consecutive top 10 finishes in the past.
I love the pick. I think Corey Connors has looked really good as of late. Pat, would love to get your feedback on your Canadian brethren.
He's fine. He's going to come T13 and it'll end up being a great value play, as David pointed out. Like, he's a great roster filler for you, but having the expectation that he's going to do any more than that, it's probably a bit tough. A guy with a very capped ceiling. Like, if you even go back and look throughout Corey Connor's year, that he's just not flashed that upside. I think last week may have been his best finish of the year, which is truly shocking. At a course which he really should have ripped up, and a lot of it had to do with that putting split that you talked about. And obviously the approach game has been amazing now for probably about a month and a half or so, but gaining almost 7 strokes putting for Corey Connors, that may have been the best putting performance. It was the best putting performance of his career by 1.1 strokes. So a true outlier in that sense, that he's probably going to come back from that a little bit. And although putting isn't necessarily the most critical thing, I mean, if you ask Scotty, if he just makes one more 5-footer last year, he wins this tournament running away. But we've seen a lot of bad putters win at Muirfield Village over the years, so that could play into it a little bit. I am a bit more dubious about his short game sustainability, because if you have a bad short game, what do you need to do to mask that a little bit? You really do need to be an excellent putter. And then you try to flip it the other way. What can bad putters do in order to mitigate that number a little bit? It was the old Luke List theory when he eventually broke through, that for whatever reason, Luke List for a 3-year stretch was one of the best short game players on the PGA Tour. Much easier to make a 2-foot putt than a 7-foot putt. And then you have the inverse, where someone like Hovland, who isn't necessarily getting it all that close to the hole, but very good inside 10 feet historically. So he masks that a little bit more. With Connors, it just feels like if it gets going bad for him, David, that it's going to stay really bad. That can his ball striking, yeah, like he gains 7.2 strokes in a tournament against Rory and a bunch of jabronis, how's that going to work at a much longer course against the world's elite? That would be my worry with him.
That's great feedback. We appreciate it. Pat, you're back on the clock. You got Scheffler. How are you going to take you through your second pick?
Well, in a 4-man, I should really go more balanced, but screw it. I'm taking Hovland.
Wow. All right. So really going to make me look bad if that works out for you. And I vetoed the audience. You kind of already gave your feedback on Hovland after we vetoed the pick, which I like. We'll go to you, Spence. Are you on Hovland this week?
I was going to take Victor Hovland if he fell back to me. And I have to say, Joel, you've managed to sabotage your connection with the audience here. And in the midst of doing that, probably sabotaged my draft a little bit also, because I like Tony Finau this week. I just want that to be on record on this show. I thought this course, when you look at some of the metrics, de-emphasized putting within my model more than almost any single track that I've looked at. And we want to talk about players that are ball striking the ball well and are not making putts. Tony Finau is at the very top of that list, or very near the top of that list. So I probably would have gone Finau and Henley had they fallen back to me. And I was hoping that Victor Hovland would have been the choice that I could have made, which was going to be a different build than I was anticipating going with. But I've talked a little bit about this de-emphasizing of putting, and this is going to be a very popular selection, but I think it's rightfully so with the golfer that if you remove the putting from the mix, all of a sudden jumps inside of the top 10 of my model and expected win equity. I'm going to take Siwoo Kim at 7,700. A lot of ownership around him. I understand that, but this is a golfer that's trending in the right direction with all the key metrics that I'm looking at. And then I'm going to go another route with a golfer that is more popular than I was anticipating him being, because I think as a whole, you look at the DFS players, and from a game theory perspective, a lot of times you get these spots where ownership gets boost because of course history. And this is the opposite factor that's coming into play here, where you look at the last 5 times he's played this tournament: miscut 68th, miscut 37th, 30th. I think a lot of that second place finish at the Charles Schwab and some of those top 25s that he has previously to that over the 2024 season has boosted this profile a little bit. But I do like Keegan Bradley's ball striking ability. He has an upside in my model for projected putting at this course. So I'm going to go two $7,700 golfers there, and I'll have to figure out a way to get different at some point, because it's a very chalky start to my build.
All right. 2 solid value picks there. We'll start with you, David. Are you on Siwoo or Keegan this week?
Yeah, I don't mind either of the plays. I'd say with Keegan, I mean, one of the strengths of this golf course, right? Like, it's 7,500 yards. It's one of the longer courses on the PGA Tour, but it spins outlined at the beginning with his excellent course breakdown. The thick rough really does penalize if you go astray off the tee. And that's kind of iconic of all these Nicklaus designs, that he likes you to be able to use the strengths in your game and becomes a real well-rounded test of who was the best golfer that week, really. And that's, you know, if you're going to spray it off the tee, you're going to be penalized. And with Keegan Bradley, he's both long off the tee but also accurate, and we've seen in the last two tournaments really separate himself from the field at both Valhalla and at the Charles Schwab with what he's been able to do with the driver. So I do think that's interesting, although, as Ben's mentioned, I think the ownership is something to be somewhat concerned about for someone in the 7K range.
Yeah, just to give a quick shout out to Pat's connection with Fantasy National, you look at his strokes gained off the tee at Nicklaus courses over the last 24 rounds, inside of the top 10 in this tournament. So all the off the tee data is trending in that right direction for Keegan.
Keegan has led the past two tournaments, I believe, off the tee. I think he led at Valhalla, led at Colonial, as mentioned. And I mean, I had wagers on him at both those tournaments, and obviously that did not go as well as I would have hoped. Yeah, he couldn't putt at Valhalla, and then the irons were shockingly bad at Colonial for a guy that ended up coming in second place. I like both these picks, Spencer. They're both going to be in my player pool, and well, I would have to be able to construct the lineups in the right way. I am going to be most definitely using them, just trying to use them in a bit different ways and try to get away from the common builds. It's almost like Lee, like I mentioned with Lee Hodges a little bit earlier. I'm still going to play Lee Hodges. I think he's a good play, but playing him with Scheffler, I think, is a very bad play. If I was going to use Lee Hodges, I would probably try to do a Stars and Scrubs lineup the same way, but not use Scheffler. Maybe try to do a Xander Vic. So like two guys, you know, Vic will be relatively highly owned, Xander a little bit lower than that. And then I can use the 15% 64K guy to save a bunch of money and then pick off maybe a Siwoo or a Keegan and then jump a level higher. So just using one of these higher owned guys in a much different way than everyone else, that still gives me leverage with that player on the field. So I'm kind of all in on that. So I've committed myself right now to an obvious Stars and Scrubs build with Scheffler and Hovland. I don't have the most money left here. I was really hoping I could find a way to get up to Ben Ann, because I love Ben Ann this week. I bet on Ben Ann this week, but I just don't have the salary cap for it. So instead of taking Hovland, I could have done something like take Ann and Lowry and then really improve the bottom end of my team. But when you start taking a look at the win equity, Spencer, I'd be curious about the win equity in your model for Scheffler and Hovland combined. It must be 35, 40%.
Give me 1 second. I can give you that answer.
And in a limited field like this, win equity is everything. So if you have the one guy, it being Scheffler, that might be worth 30% of that. Pairing him up with someone else who's probably inside the top 5 to 10, also in terms of win equity, is such a huge bonus against the field here. Like, you're going to need a winner in a limited cut, limited field event. You have no chance unless Scotty and Morikawa both miss the cut, and then everyone's playing with a 5-6 lineup. It's probably unlikely to happen, so you're not going to do that. So with my next pick to pair with Scheffler and Hovland, I'm going to take someone who's very good with his long irons, an excellent putter. So I need him to be able to convert these. But the 200-yard proximity, as pointed out a little bit earlier, goes hand-in-hand with some of the reachable par fives. That's great and everything. Also, a big advantage on the longer par threes, which tend to play, you want to play them around even par, if possible. If you can tread the water on the par threes, tread the water on the par fives, and really on the par fours, sorry, and beat up on the par fives, like, you're going to be in contention by the time Sunday comes along, as long as you can avoid a double or triple somewhere along the way. And I like the way that Thomas Dietrich is playing. I think he's always a better DraftKings play than he is a bet. He's $6,800. He fits with my other two guys very well. So I will select Thomas Dietrich.
There you have it. First pick under 7K off the board. Pairing Dietrich with Scheffler and Hovland. David, what say you on Thomas Dietrich this week?
Thomas Dietrich, nemesis of mine across the years, nemesis of every golf bettor in the world. Look, promising that he was fourth at Valhalla at a Nicklaus design course, so I think that's a really interesting comp that you can put in. And I tend to agree with Pat in that Thomas Dietrich tends to be a better DFS play, right? Because at his current price at 6,800, you don't need him to win the tournament. You just need him to finish like top 20. You know, that's all you kind of need from him. And in terms of that, I do see that Dietry has a lot of safety. But before I get into my next pick, I just have a yes or no question for Pat Mayo. Does Thomas Dietry win on the PGA Tour in the next 3 years?
Yes.
Okay. It's on record. I hold you to it.
All right. How about you?
EVR got a win on the PGA Tour. Dietry can get one.
True.
Very true. Spence, although, in saying that, Dietry has never won on the DP World Tour either.
No, he's never won anywhere. I don't even think he beat me in our head-to-head.
Very good.
All right, David, your third pick here. Go ahead. You're on the clock.
All right. Well, I was extremely concerned when I saw what salary that Pat had coming up, because I was afraid that I would lose this next player who I really wanted to include this week. And to be honest, I'm surprised to see him only at 5.5% ownership, because I thought that Justin Rose was going to be extremely popular this week. Pat Mayo winces. He's a past champion at this golf course. He's shown steady improvement with his approach play. Last week, he gained over 6 strokes on approach. He's gaining distance on the field as well, including at Valhalla, another Nicklaus design where he finished 6th. He's extremely accurate off the tee, and he's a good chipper and a good putter. The other thing I'll point out is Thursday, Friday, Saturday are going to be very windy in Dublin, Ohio. And Justin Rose is excellent in the wind. We've seen him with the Pebble Beach victory, for example, another small greens kind of golf course where he was managed to separate himself there. His record here is just very, very good. And he's managed to perform at other long courses like Wells Fargo back in 2019. He finished 3rd there as well. So I was surprised to see the price on him given his recent performance, particularly at the PGA Championship, and what his approach metrics have been saying to me recently.
Justin Rose. Pat, I saw maybe a little face being made. Give us your take on Justin Rose this week.
Can't do it. I don't care. There's a couple of guys that when the numbers tell you that they're like doing well and then you trust them. I mean, it's the same way I feel about Lee Hodges, that if he comes dead last, it's going to be like, oh yeah, that makes a lot of sense. He's Lee Hodges. Justin Rose, like, give me a break with this guy. He's had 2 good tournaments in a row and all of a sudden he's back. If Tiger Woods won this tournament too, David, we taking him?
Fair point.
William, let's draft William McGirt. Let's have him in there. In fact, you know what? We can take David Lingmerth, who beat Justin Rose in a playoff at this course. I just can't do it with him. Now he's going to win, and I'm going to feel foolish, but here we are.
Here we are.
I have something to propose for Pat here. Pat, $100, miscut, no blood, Justin Rose versus Thomas Dietry.
Oh, just like straight up better finishing position?
Yeah.
Yeah, easy. What currency are we playing in?
Canadian dollars. Let's go your local.
We can do, I mean, from our parts of the world, I think we can meet in the middle with US dollars.
US dollars somewhere, yeah. Closer to you. Yep. All right, let's go. Miscut, no blood, Justin Rose v. Dietry.
Wager accepted. I love it. We will follow along, post a bet on Twitter. We need to crown a winner by the end of the tournament. To be determined. But audience, we're back on the clock. I need more nominations. I will say, Zach, I love Lucas Glover, so we'll lock that in as our first pick. As the point was made earlier, I think Pat said it. Pretty sure Spence said it as well. This is a course where it is really challenging. You need to hit fairways. You're going to need to be on your irons. The around the green game is going to be important. But the putter is almost like neutral. And for a guy like Glover who – you know, his biggest weakness is the putter. If he finds his ball striking, plays as well he's been playing all year, and can just not lose a lot of strokes putting, I think you get a really good result from Glover this week at this course at, you know, a 7K salary, which is another value pick there, leaving us with a ton of money to spend moving forward, which I love. Looking at here, we're left with very few options at the top, and the audience is heavily pushing us towards Rory, and I'm like trying to find a way to pick anyone else other than Rory, but I don't really have a lot of nominations to work with. So unless I see another name drop in like 2 seconds, we're going to have to stick with Rory here, which I'm not all that thrilled about. If someone wants to put right Ludwig, I wouldn't mind taking a shot on Ludwig at this point. Anyone? Any?
You would take Ludwig over Rory?
I would, for sure.
Why?
make another $100 bet. Just see how much money you can get down on.
Yeah. Well, can we increase the wager amount here?
Ludwig, you know, listen, assuming he's back to healthy, which.
Why are we assuming that again?
He's playing.
Is it the knee brace he's walking around with?
Like to take the risk on that. I think he's going to be healthy. I think he's playing. He's coming out. You know, if he's not healthy, I don't think he would play. I guess you're right. That is a concern that he has a knee brace. And I am probably channeling my inner, we need someone that's going to withdraw from this tournament to make sure I keep my streak alive. But I think Ludwig is a little, for the sake of, all right, fine, Pat, you know, you convinced me. Take Rory, lock it in. Rory's the pick. Even though I like Ludwig and I would have taken him, we're going to go with Rory. I mean, Rory's obviously, he's picked his game up over the last few weeks. The CBS reporter as his new girlfriend will be there. So maybe he'll try and play well for her. And that good luck might be able to push him over to the top for the win. We'll go to you, Pat. What do you like about Rory this week?
I don't really.
Okay. All right. Just don't like Ludwig.
Yeah.
Okay. Fair enough. How about you? We'll ask you quick, Spence. Are you on Rory at all this week?
I would say no to both of Rory and Oberg. And just to touch on Pat's question that he asked, 23.53% on Scheffler, 5.01% on Hovland, a little bit less than 30% for both of those two to win. I just think when we look at Oberg here, to get back to that topic, I have, when we're looking at $9,000 and up golfers here, he's probably one of the worst values I have on my board. And that's not even considering the injury into the mix here. This is a highly boom or bust selection in my model that gets made only worse with the injury concerns.
There you have it. All right. We appreciate you, Spence. All right, David, you're on the call with your fourth pick. We'd love your take on Rory, and then who are you going with in the fourth slot?
I mean, what I was going to say is that if we keep throwing these wages around, this might be the way to get Pat Mayo on the show every week, because he'll come here just to supplement his income and just keep things ticking along, keep the lights on, taking money off us on the BGA Draftcast. So, look, I would have taken Rory McIlroy over Lidvick as well. I just think the upside's there. If there is comps to Wells Fargo in terms of a long, tricky golf course, obviously we know what Rory does around Quail Hollow. Lucas Glover, again, the ball striking looks good. The ownership's a concern for me. I'm seeing him pushing 8%, which is one of the higher values under 7,500, which kind of breaks rule 16 for me, especially for a guy who we just know like is just liable to lose 10 strokes putting at any opportunity that he can. I'm going to take the opposite. I'm going to take a very good putter, and also someone who's very good in the wind. We've seen at Southern Hills, for example, he played decently. He is 12th at the Valhalla at PGA Championship, and has played well at PGA National, another Jack Nicklaus design, where he's finished 3rd, 5th, and 9th in his recent appearances. And that's Alex Noren, who's just elevated his game of late. I think that he's going to lose some ownership this week, given that he lost strokes on approach at the Canadian Open. And what I'd say, I guess, is that he's come in on a run of just incredibly hot form before that. And if we can discount that as being, you know, 1 week that he didn't maybe perform as well as he could have, we're going to get a lot of depressed ownership off the back of it. And he's playing some really good golf outside of that one result. I like his short game. I like his performance in windy conditions. And the fact that he's going to be able to scramble and keep the score going, I think is very promising for Alex Noren, who also tends to do some very good work over 200 yards on approach.
Alex Noren has been playing really well this season, 8,100. Pat, will you be playing Alex Noren all this week?
Yeah, probably not. I'll probably be a moron and play Lowry instead, who basically does everything else that David just said, except he will lose 13 strokes putting.
Well, there you have it. Maybe not this week. Maybe he'll find it. And you have your next pick here. I'm not sure you might be able to afford Lowry, but where are you heading next with your fourth pick?
No, I can't afford Lowry, unfortunately, because it really does sacrifice what I have to do at the bottom. I can't even afford Seb Straka, who I love this week. He's still available at 75-1 if you want to go to him in the outright market. Another winner out of Nicklaus Design and 3 top 10s in his past 4 starts. But for me, I'm going to have to take a guy whose putter has been a problem. But like I said, I'm kind of avoiding, and Spencer kind of pointed it out too, like you're really downplaying some of the very poor putters. Can you get an electric tee to green performance with these wide fairways? I think you can hit fairways. we'll see about that because sometimes he starts spraying it around. But the long approaches, the approaches in general, and even the short game has been quite good. So at $7,000, I am going to take Asian American sensation, Kurt Kitayama.
Kurt Kitayama, a fan favorite on this show, a name that has brought a lot of controversy on the DraftCast. At 7K, I like the pick. Would love your feedback, Spence. Will you be on Kurt Kitayama this week?
I'm going to give a betting answer here, and yes, I am going to be on Kurt Kitayama. I believe the number has moved since I've recommended it in my Rotoballer article, but there was a Kurt Kitayama price out there at minus 110 over Mackenzie Hughes. The last I saw it, it was up to minus 122. I still had value on that number. I thought this was a market overcorrection that had taken place, whether you look at the lack of ownership, the price that he opened at, just because of the lack of course history that we've seen from here with back-to-back miscuts. I think this is a really nice spot for Kitayama.
All right. There you have it, Spence. You got two, about 8,200 per pick to spend. Where are you going with your next two spots?
So I've been talking about trying to figure out a way to deviate away from all the projected ownership. And I guess naturally when you don't have Scottie Scheffler in a lineup, you're already deviating just based off of that to begin with. But I'm happy that Pat brought up Sepp Straka and wasn't able to take him, because my selection was going to be either Sepp Straka at 7,500 or Kitayama at 7,000. I'll go with the one he didn't take, with Straka at 7,500. And this to me is now where I'm going to have to try to find a way to get some leverage to this build here. There were seven players in my model, and this is not comparing their price rank versus my overall rank that I had in my sheet. But there were seven players that graded inside of the top 30 of every single category that I ran. Surprisingly, Tony Finau was one of those names that we've talked about already for why I liked him. Every other player was $9,000 or above. The one player that didn't make the Roto Baller article, just because of a couple of the factors here with him being a negative value on the surface, but we don't have the ownership and we're going to get leverage, I think Tommy Fleetwood is a really intriguing choice here at 9,100. It's all these darlings that we've seen of weeks past, and all of a sudden you don't necessarily get a finish that you want. And I don't want to say a 21st at the RBC Canadian Open is bad, but it's not what everybody wanted. And now you get this price tag to where the market seems to think he's too highly priced. I have him at a fringe 10% option. That's lower than every single golfer that I see $9,000 and up right now. So I'm going to create some of that leverage with Fleetwood, and then I'm going to try to find one other name to really differ this lineup from where we have it right now.
All right. Well, we'll get the feedback first on Fleetwood. Did you lock in Straka as your first pick as well?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Straka, Fleetwood. Listen, I like Straka as well. I know, Pat, you said you really like Straka. He's obviously playing great golf. He seems like a really good value in this price range. Pat, would love your feedback on Fleetwood this week.
I think he's fine. I think that he kind of suits exactly what you would want to do at this course. And with a lot of the Spencer's built, that you don't really need him to win. You just need a very classic top 10 from Tony or from Tommy. I was going to say Tony. You probably need that from Finau as well. The one thing that I don't like about the pick, looking at Spencer's lineup, is not that I'm like the highest on Wyndham Clark this week or even Thigala, but I think that those are two names that we've all been kind of on for the past few weeks, and we feel very let down by a lot of them. But I mean, Wyndham Clark has done his best work in signature events, and the only reason that I say that is because it leaves him with $8,200, which firmly makes Matt Fitzpatrick his next pick, or Sungjae, I suppose. So it's probably going to be Matt Fitzpatrick. I would have taken the 2v2 of Clark or Thigala or Homa with Ben Ann to go along with them rather than Fitzpatrick and Fleetwood. That'd be my only pushback, really.
Ben Ann was massively under consideration. He's inside the top 15 for projected win equity for me this week. That was the other route I was going to go. You've named a lot of players, Pat. It might be one of those options if it falls back to me, but we'll get to that a little bit later.
I love it. Your first draft, guys, and already looking ahead for future picks. That's an advanced drafter. Pat, you got your next pick here. $6,700 per pick to spend. Where are you going with your fifth pick?
Well, because, I mean, I keep circling back to Lee Hodges, and I'm not going to take him. Just, I don't know why I'm not going to take him. Because there's two guys that I want. Does it work for me? If I take Hodges, who can I get at that point? Let's see here. Oh, Hoagie. Oh, boy. Here we go. Let's lose some money. Lee Hodges gives me, now it only brings me back to 7,000. That doesn't really do me any good because you have already taken Lucas Glover, and Lucas Glover is a player that I like a lot this week. I actually just finished building all my graphics for the U.S. Open because I'm doing a big player-by-player show tomorrow, and there was only two players out of the 45-player profile graphics that I built who have strokes lost tee to green over the past 24 rounds. It's Jason Day and Ricky Fowler, so probably not the best form coming in to this. So I will not end up taking Lee Hodges because leverage doesn't mean anything in a draft like this. You can't take the same guys that I'm taking. So it's kind of irrelevant. It's more towards, you know, your big build GPP. So I will take a guy that just, he sucks on approach, which is probably not the best for this course, but he has top 20s in both majors so far. He's played against the elevated events and stronger fields really well. And for him, it's driving, it's short game, and it's putting. And for me, Spencer, I don't know how it looked for you, is I kind of threw driving aside this week, just assuming that unless you have a case of the shanks, you're probably going to hit the fairway. So I actually think that short game, especially around the green play and sand play, comes into it a little bit more. So for me, I'm going to take Taylor Moore at $6,800.
Love the Taylor Moore value play. You know he has upside in the 6K range. Would love to hear your feedback this week on Taylor Moore, David.
In terms of the positives, I do think that this is a comp to Copperhead course. Obviously, he won that in 2023. We were on him that week at a juicy, juicy price as well. So that was a nice win for us. And if this is a comp to another tough course with long rough, driving accuracy, and then long approach irons, I think Copperhead's a good comp on that side. My concern comes with the fact that he lost like over three strokes on approach in just two rounds. We're missing the cut of the Charles Schwab. I don't think that the Colonial is the best comp for what we're going to see here, but that is always concerning when I see someone lose a ton of strokes on approach and whether they're going to be able to turn that around pretty quickly. In saying that, he finished 12th at Valhalla the week before that, which obviously was another Nicklaus design.
I mean, he's lost strokes on approach in each of his past seven starts, and it really doesn't affect his performances all that much because he gains so many off the tee and around the green. And usually when he putts well, even a little bit, it's really well on the green. So, I mean, for all these guys, the way that I've constructed my team is, as David pointed out a little bit earlier, I just kind of need top 25s from these four guys and have my good guys go out and try to win.
There you have it. All right. I love it. David, following that up with your fifth pick and $7,800 per pair to spend, where are you heading from here?
Quick question for Pat. Would he rather have Dietrich or Moore in his matchup against Justin Rose with me?
I would rather have Dietrich, I think. Although, I mean, Justin Rose, and for what Justin Rose is doing at this point of his career, albeit the last 2 weeks being sort of an outlier with his approaches, that Taylor Moore and Justin Rose are actually kind of a nice comp for what they're level seems to be. That Justin Rose has missed a lot of cuts this year and he's popped up once or twice, and kind of the same thing with Taylor Moore, just because of his approach play can take him out of contention so quickly. But I think I would want Dietrich in that spot because Dietrich sucks because you'll bet on him to win and he'll be winning by five shots and then somehow not win. It's not that he comes in dead last.
Yeah, and I think that's the correct answer in terms of the safety as well. So just want to kind of see if I could trick you into switching to Moore, but he's too sharp for me, old Pat Mayo, isn't he? He's going to dodge that one nicely. Hey, look, I would have taken Sepp Straka here. I love Straka this week. I think he's got massive upside. Kind of surprised that he's floating around 12%. I think that he's obvious value at 7,500. So it means I've had to change my strategy a little bit to round out this draft. I could have taken Lowry here. I don't trust him at the putter, although it would be ironic that a course named Muirfield, which is obviously in Scotland, held in Dublin, Ohio, that an Irishman comes out and plays well would be kind of entertaining. But instead, I'm going to go and take Tom Kim. We've started to see signs of his game of late. Obviously, the driving accuracy is really key for Tom Kim, and we've seen a lot of improvement in that regard. And fourth last week at the Canadian Open, we began to see life as part of the last few tournaments, which has really been key. I had a lot of concern at the beginning of the year that his putter was broken. And look, it tends to be turning the last kind of like few tournaments. So I think it's really promising. And we know that Tom Kim's best work comes with his long line approach plays. He's kind of won on similar courses as well. I'm a little bit concerned that it's going to be a tougher test than a birdie fest. I probably prefer Tom Kim at a birdie
Birdie Fest because of both of his wins have come at those really high, low scores. But look, I think he's trending nicely, and I'm happy to deviate from Striker and go with Tom Kim here.
Tom Kim, it is. Interesting pick. I wasn't on Tom Kim this week, but I could see him showing up this week potentially. Spence, I would love your feedback. Were you going to play Tom Kim at all this week?
I think there's a handful of players, if you look at that 7,700 to 8,200 range that I'm specifically in right now, that I was considering. Tom Kim would be one of those names if I dropped down a little bit lower. Like the pick, think he's a fair value where we're at. The ownership is probably a little bit higher than I would have liked to have seen it, but I think it's a good value with a player that does have positive trajectory for upside in my sheet.
All right, there you have it. Audience, we got a couple nominations in. We only have 8K per pick. We're going to need some more to make this work. While we wait for some final nominations, Pat, are you on or interested in Tom Kim at all this week?
Not really. Nothing really against him. It's just can't play everyone. He's just one of those middling guys for me that I have no very positive feelings for, no negative feelings for. I can see why he would be an appealing play for Mirfield Village, just mainly based on his accuracy and how dialed in he can get with his irons. I do worry that Tom Kim can slip a little bit, and the bad rounds have been especially bad this year. That one bad round can kind of take him out of this tournament. And, you know, there is a cut here, although 60 of the 71 guys might end up making it, who knows, especially if it's not very optimal scoring conditions the first 2 days. But I don't know, he just kind of does nothing for me this week.
All right. Our final's in. There's a lot of suggestions for this final pick for Benny Ann. I like Benny Ann this week. We're going to lock that in with our first pick. And to make that work, we're going to follow it up with Denny McCarthy as our final pick, which should give us the perfect amount of salary remaining. Both guys, like Benny Ann's playing great golf this year. His driving distance has been excellent. But it's really been all-around game that I really like. And I think he's getting less credit than he deserves, even at 8,400. I'm happy to pay that price. I'd love to get your feedback. David, are you on Benny Ann or Denny McCarthy this week?
I prefer Benny Ann to Denny this week. I'm seeing Denny getting a lot of steam in the markets, and his ownership is probably a little bit too high for me. And probably the concern for me with Denny, when he was kind of trending towards victory, his approach play was what was really driving that, is the improvement in the approach play. Because we all know what he can do on the greens with the putter, right? And the approach play, again, has just been either at field average or losing to the field the last few tournaments. And so that's not really the kind of mark that I want to see Denny hitting at in order to go and have another performance. In saying that, I mean, he was runner-up here last year and fifth the year before that. So obviously he's got a liking for the course. I just would have liked to have seen a little bit more on approach from him lately before I start including him in my player.
There you have it. All right, we're running a little behind time, so we'll kind of speed through the wrap up the last round of this draft. David, with your last pick, 7,800 to spend, who are you targeting?
Yeah, and I kind of would have liked to have had enough to take Matt Fitzpatrick here, who I think is playing a lot better than people give him credit for. I'm not going to fall for Scam Young again. I've had enough times of him doing that to me in the past. And concerning for Cam Young is the 200-yard approach play is really going backwards in 2024. And so that's a concern for me on this golf course. Instead, I'm going to take a risk on Will Zalatoris. Finished second at Southern Hills in windy conditions with bent grass greens. And the end of the Memorial, finished fifth in 2022. We know that Will Zalatoris has a tendency to show up in majors, and I do consider this to be a major-type test. It's going to be a tough tournament. Winning scores could be somewhere like minus 10 to minus 15, something in that range. And with the thick rough, his approach metrics are just off the charts, and his ability to really grind it out shows a lot of promise. And he hasn't been, like, absolutely dreadful with the putter. I mean, it just gives me worry that when you watch him like make a 5 foot putt, that it seems to just go all haywire and get real squiffy on the backstroke. But look, I'll take a risk on him here over Scam Young.
That seems like a pick I would make, a risk for sure, but certainly has some upside. Pat, you got one left, but would love your take on Will Zalatoris.
I like Will. I almost jumped on the huge number immediately, and then I kind of waffled on it. Then that number was gone. look, it's tough. I think that David made a good point about the long rough. He's chipped better out of those surfaces. Obviously, he's played well at Bay Hill, which I'd say is an around-the-green comp. Torrey Pines, another around-the-green comp to Mirrorfield Village. And we've seen a lot of players who played those two courses well also have a lot of sustained success at Mirrorfield Village, except for Patrick Cantlay, who just kind of like plays well here and nowhere else anywhere in his career anymore. Fun that his name has not come up to this point. Suck that, Patrick Cantlay. Jerk. Anyway, yeah, I think it's fine. Willie Z was never really going to be as someone I was going to target in a draft like this. He's not one of my guys this week, but he is someone that I'll probably mix into the player pool, but I'll probably put in Cam Young too, because I am a glutton for punishment, David. I think he was first round leader here 2 years ago.
That sounds like that could be. I think there might be something there. Well, unfortunately, Pat, you can't afford him with your last pick at 6,700. Would love to see how you're going to round out this squad.
Well, I'm going to take the guy that won me the $200 single entry at the Honda Classic. I guess it's not called the Cognizant Classic now. Earlier this year, he actually was very much in contention a year ago and just had a dreadful final round. The play has been up and down since his win, but when you take a look at his underlying numbers, he does a lot of the things he would want to do well at Mirrorfield Village. The around the green game kind of sucks. However, the putting is sporadic. It's up, it's down. It's usually down. Sometimes it can go up, but he hits a ton of fairways. He is the best player in this field over the past 50 rounds from 175, or sorry, past 36 rounds from 175 to 200 yards and 20th from 200 plus proximity. The approach play has just been very good for a player at this price. And you hope that his experience at this course from last year, where he had three really good rounds and one really terrible one, can kind of come through now that he's more settled on the PGA Tour and he's a winner. So I will take Austin Ekroth at $6,700.
I like Austin Ekroth. I definitely endorse that pick at 6,700. He certainly has a lot of upside as you round out your squad here. Spence, you got one left. Would love your take on Austin Ekroth and how you're rounding out your squad.
I thought he was the best value in the $6,000 section. I run my model over a two-year perspective. Pat talked about the proximity from 175 to 200 yards. You look at that over a two-year earning duration, seventh in my sheet. So a lot to like about the accuracy numbers that you're going to get from Ekroth here. There's a couple different ways that I could end my build. I kind of think Cameron Young is an interesting route to take. He has upside numbers. The floor leaves a lot to be desired, but we've talked about it. Like David, you mentioned it on the show. Like when you get a nickname of Scam Young, nobody wants to play you anymore. And you're seeing that with a 7% ownership. So I think for leverage, it's an intriguing play and an intriguing proposition to try to get invested into. I'm going to go a little bit of a different route with a golfer, though, that Pat mentioned at the very beginning here. It's not Matthew Fitzpatrick. It's going to be Sungjae Im. I see sub 10% ownership right now. The irons are finally starting to trend in more of a positive direction from what we got early in 2024 here. Like, I recommended Sungjae over Jason Day in a matchup at minus 120. I believe that's minus 132 now over on DraftKings. But Sungjae's gained in his last three starts with the approach 1.16 shots. He hasn't lost in a substantial fashion in his last seven tournaments. I know that might not sound like the most glowing review of a player here, but this is a lot better than what we had seen recently from him. And there's no ownership. And you look at some of these recent results that you've gotten, we're starting to finally get these top 15s coming back. So I think the long-term data is going to, at least from the more recent run of it, is going to have some concerns. But if you look at the last 12 rounds or so, this is now starting to trend back in a positive direction again.
I like Sungjae. He was someone I was considering with our picks. I can definitely endorse that one on my end. That's a wrap for the draft tonight, but we're not done yet. Before we get you out of here, we have our first round leader plays. We're also going to post the draft on Twitter. Let us know who you think is going to win. We're going to crown a champion next week. Does Spence get his three-peat? Does Pat take us down? Or does Joel audience get the first win? To be determined, David also squad looks very nice. Before we do the first round leaders, quick question for you, Pat. Was there anyone that you were surprised that did not get drafted tonight?
Homa?
Yeah, Homa's a good one. I was a little bit surprised as well. I think his price is right this week. Didn't make it to any of our squads, but that's a fair take. All right. Hey, while we're at it, for everyone still on, don't forget to smash the like button. Give us a follow. It goes a long way. Follow Win Daily. We'll be posting our ownership articles, updates on weather before the weekend, outright bets. But for tonight, we do have those first round leaders. We'll start with you, David. Who are you looking at in the first round leader market?
Yeah, and look, speaking of first round leaders, Pat mentioned about Cam Young in 2022 being the first round leader, which was correct. He shared it with six other players and then finished 60th, which is like such a Cam Young tournament. It just like speaks to everything that Cam Young does at every single event that he plays. So that was right on the money and good intel from Pat there. Look, it's interesting this week, right? Because generally with these signature field events, everyone goes out in like 2 hours, but everybody's going off the first tee this week. So you've got disparity from 7 a.m. right through to 2 p.m. And wind does look to pick up throughout the day. So I did really want to hone in the morning. And I've actually only just got two this week just because of the nature of the selections. And that's Xander Schauffele at 17s. You can get him at 19s if you don't want to take him with five places. But as Pat knows, I'm a sucker for the place markets and like him to get at least a top five in the first round leader there. And then Matt Fitzpatrick, who I mentioned on the show, again gets a morning tea time. You can get him at a slightly longer number in terms of the first round leader markets there. I'm just going to stick with those two. Fitzpatrick at 40s and Xander Schauffele would be my best bet for first round leader at 17s. Something we've seen him done twice in the last few tournaments.
I love it. How about you, Spence? Who's targeting in the first round leader market?
I just have one right now, Lucas Glover at 70-1. He's fourth in my model in proximity plus around the green. The putter's going to be the downside, but you know, we just need one round out of him. So I thought 70-1 was a very enticing price.
I love it on my squad. I'll back that one as well. Pat, would love your feedback on the first round leaders for this week.
Do you just have to auto bet Davis Riley? I think he's been the first round leader. He was tied with Cam Young that year, 2 years ago. I think he was the first round leader last year, and he's coming off a win.
Yep.
What do we have the number for Davis Riley?
It's got to be close to triple digits, I would have to think.
Just found it. 80-1 on DraftKings.
Let's find a better number than 80-1.
You can get him at MGM for hundreds.
There we go.
There you go. Listen, I love it. We're shooting for the fences, especially on this course. I think it makes sense to go for a long shot play. I'm going to give out two. I like Harris English at 65-1, but my favorite is going to be Akshay Bhatia at also 65-1. I think you can find some lightning in a bottle and get you a potential first round leader. Go ahead, Pat.
Yeah, I was going to say, I like Straka and potentially Lowry as well as first round leaders, but I just don't love their numbers right now. They're at like 55-1 or 45-1 in terms of Seb Straka. But I think if you were just going to make one first round leader bet, I actually just ran a first round leader model as we were talking, and it kind of jibes with what you just perceive that Colin Morikawa is like the best first round player on earth.
There you go. There you have it. So that's a lock. I would suggest that you take your mortgage out of your home and bet it on Colin Morikawa to be the first round leader, because there's no way that doesn't happen. So it's guaranteed money. That's a safe bet. We appreciate the advice, Pat. But Pat, we appreciate you. We appreciate you coming on Draft with us tonight. Your knowledge, your insights were fantastic. Before we get out of here tonight, tell everyone listening, is there anywhere else they can catch you this week or moving forward with more content?
Yeah, I got shows coming out every day. If you were missing Sia, who's like lipping my Colin Morikawa pick, who I'm pretty sure he mentioned to me on my show this morning, you can go check that out. I did a show with Sia and Alex Blickle for the best bets. I do my DraftKings breakdown, the final bets, the weather on Wednesday morning, all over on Mayo Media Network or the Pat Mayo Experience audio podcast, and full, complete free breakdowns in the Mayo Media newsletter, which you can just find on Substack. You can Google it. You can follow me on Twitter and find it up there. But starting on Friday, I have a legalization state-by-state update on sports betting and daily fantasy coming out on Thursday. But starting on Friday, it's U.S. Open time every single day. I got Matt Vincenzi for a player-by-player on Friday. Saturday, Keith Stewart for the model breakdown and the course breakdown. bets and picks, one and done on Monday, best bets on Tuesday, DraftKings on Wednesday, and then the live cut sweat show during the PM wave, starting on hole nine for the featured groups on Friday, live with myself, Jeff Feinberg, and the most cursed person on earth. No offense, Joel, Tim Anderkest.
Well, if you watched tonight, you saw how fantastic Pat is, but you probably knew that already. Follow along, catch some of his stuff. You got a peek of it tonight. It only gets better on his shows. Pat, we greatly appreciate you tonight. Good luck this week. And fellas, did I forget anything?
Sports.
Just one thing. Yeah, massive thanks to Pat Mayo. But the correct answer, as always, sports.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.